Hello, beautiful people, and welcome to another segment of Complete Wellness with Cindy, the Busy Woman's Cheerleader. This is the channel where women from all walks of life can stop by, get tools and resources to help them thrive 360 in mind, body, spirit, and finances. I invite you to stay connected, subscribe to this channel, and visit me online at thecindyrand.com. Now for today's segment. Hello, beautiful people, and welcome to another segment of Complete Wellness with Cindy, the Busy Woman's Cheerleader. So super excited, as usual. You probably get tired of me saying that, but when I'm excited, I like for people to know that I'm excited. But first, before we get started with our special guest today, let's do a little housekeeping.
Entrepreneurs don't just need annual tax pros. They need an accounting partner that understands the nuances of their industry all year long. Envision Tax and Accounting Services supports you and your business with full-service accounting, bookkeeping, payroll, tax services, and expert business consultation, delivered by a team with over three decades of experience. Innovative entrepreneurs trust Envision Tax and Accounting Services to create smart systems, leverage the right technology, and build financial processes that support long-term growth and profit. Whether you're just starting out, are an established company, or a nonprofit, we meet you where you are. Customizing virtual or traditional accounting solutions that fit your workflow, budget, and goals. Got questions? We've got answers. Contact Envision Tax and Accounting Services today to schedule your free consultation. Visit us at www.etaaservices.com or by calling 407-951-1492 and let us help you enjoy your envisioned business. That's www.envisiontaxandaccounting.com or 407-951-1492.
And our power quote of today is, I can't think of any better representation of beauty than someone who is unafraid to be herself. And that comes from Emma Stone. I love that. I absolutely love that. So if you would please help me welcome today's guest, Lynn Green. She is an award-winning community advocate, columnist, author, speaker, and business and nonprofit consultant, right down my line. Lynn helps individuals, organizations, and community turn adversity into growth by breaking generational curses and cycles. Well, I call them curses. Breaking generational cycles, strengthening mindsets, and leading with faith, intention, and value-driven strategy. Please help me welcome Miss Lynn Green.
Hi, everyone. Hello. Hello. It is such a pleasure to be here to have this amazing and most important conversation with you. So thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, I like to start off with, I don't like to say introduction. So let's just say, tell us what led you to this point of advocacy, author, you know, speaker, working with nonprofits and helping people with those generational cycles being broken.
For me, it was pretty much just at the very core, the root of who I am is I'm a lover of people, and I love to serve, others. And that has just always been in me as a kid. And we'll talk a little bit about where that came from, I'm sure, as we get into talking a little bit more about my book. But overall, it's just I was faith-led. I can't really even take credit for it. It's one of those things that, you know, your spiritual journey takes you where it takes you, and your purpose is what it is. And here I am as an advocate and serving in so many different capacities.
I love it. I absolutely love it. That was the common denominator. I remember when they sent me your information, and I was like, that service, you know, there's always like a common denominator. So let's jump right in. Enough with the secrets, breaking generational cycles and choosing healing. What does that look like?
You know, that the title of the book itself came from a moment of truth in my own healing journey. I realized that silence had protected pain for generations within my family. And I know for a fact that it's been the same for many families that I've worked with in the community. Ultimately, I end up coming in contact with people with the work that I do in their most vulnerable and crisis-like moments. And so I know that it takes someone to be brave enough to say, enough, you know, and it's not about blaming anybody else. In this case, certainly it wasn't about blaming my mother. It was certainly about breaking the cycle and just how sometimes when we're born into, you know, dysfunction or situations that build our identity to be a certain way, it really affects every other aspect of our life. So for me, it was important to share the message. Yeah.
So normalizing dysfunction, what does that look like for you?
Well, normalizing dysfunction is one, being 100% honest with who you are and where you came
from. I'm going to go easy on you. Stop it. I just, you know, we have a conversation.
But normalizing dysfunction.
I mean, what does that look like?
Yeah, it means being honest, 100% transparent, shedding all of the, you know, all of the superficial, the walls and all the things that we build up, understanding that we are who we are because of where we came from. And so many people are ashamed of that. And maybe in some ways there are some things that are shameful, but, you know, just being able to recognize that, hey, you know, you're not the only one. And there are a number of different families that have experienced the same thing. So that's what it's been like for me.
Yeah, this is true. And I thought of that when you were explaining about your book and explaining about the work that you do. I think that is a big, I don't even want to say problem. I'm going to say concern versus issue. Mm-hmm. That's huge because, again, you know, you don't get to choose your family, just like you don't get to choose your assignment. You know, the good Lord gives you an assignment for life or defines your purpose and lets you know what it is. You know, it's up to you whether or not you choose to surrender to it and be obedient to it. But that's one thing. We don't get to choose our families, you know, that the bloodlines run deep, generations and generations. And a lot of times the love runs deep and a lot of times the issues run deep. And when you say, you know, enough with the secrets, you know, my thought is as well, you're not going and peeling these layers of bananas. You're not blaming, you know, you're just trying to dismantle some things to help the next generation that comes after you and, you know, possibly your seed or your seed, you know, come after you, kind of, you know, start with a better slate, you know, have to start with a better slate. So when you say, you know, you're choosing healing, healing hurts.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. It's a wonderful, very, very, very warm word, right? It's comforting to say, "Oh, I'm healed. I'm healing. I'm in the
healing." Sounds good. It sounds good.
But it is painful. Absolutely.
And when you are allowing the good Lord to really, and you know, this is the thing. And let me back up, because when you just said that, I thought about the many times prior to my really for real healing, the many times, you know, it says, you know, I'm healed, I'm whole, you know, it's almost like a cliche. Mm-hmm. And you're walking around broken and bruised and battered and mentally unstable, and you don't know it because, you know, you've normalized your dysfunction.
Absolutely.
You've normalized that. Mm-hmm. And so here it is, you're carrying around all this luggage. You're carrying around all these issues, because you've normalized it. And so I often say you can't take someone along a journey that you've not trod it yourself.
Absolutely.
So in order to be healed, you have to know that it does not feel good, but you're better for it.
100%.
I think of that scripture. I think David said it, you know, it was good that I was afflicted.
Mm.
So listen, I remember for years, it's like I would skip past that because, you know, I'm not going to ever say that it was good that I was afflicted. You know, I mean, like, what is that? You know, why would you say that? You have to watch your words.
Right.
But essentially, when you've really gone through the process,
mm-hmm.
work of healing and the acceptance of what you learn through that process, you
yes.
can then say it was good that I was afflicted, because mm-hmm. it's like those broken bones, they can't heal. Sometimes they have to be broken further or broken again and put back together for complete and total healing.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, and we
So,
know that part of that journey is also it's isolating. It's a lonely experience because no one can do the work but you know, and so,
and
but
you
it's
have to
all
agree to it. There you go.
worth
Exactly. There you go. And so when you think of generational cycles, that extends back, oh gosh, not just religious, generational. A lot of times it's systematics, it's poverty, it's sickness. It's a lot of different things that intertwine that. And like I said, I'm not going to go deep down in the water because we could be on that all day. But when a person or an individual or a set of people have accepted dysfunction as a normalcy, this is just the way it is. In your experience, how have you found that it's harder to get them to a point of healing and acceptance than someone who says, you know what, I know that it's just a lot of screwed up stuff in my family. I can't do anything about that. I would like to do better, but I don't know where to start.
Yeah, so it's important to realize, I think, that when you look at the ways that we are raised and how we live and develop and in these families of ours, most of the time it's about survival. And so I think when you shape it that way and address it in a way that, well, it's really not anyone's fault. For instance, for me, I had a difficult time connecting, in that mother-daughter relationship with my mom. And for as hard as I tried, I got to a point where I started to resent the fact that I was being this perfect child to hopefully get some attention and some love, this self-perceived neglect I had. But when I really sat through my healing journey and understood that why is she like this? Where did this come from? Why has she raised us this way? How did her mother raise her? And how did her mother's mother, also affect that same kind of lineage? And so most times, what you find, it's about survival. It's about how we're taught, whether it's silence, that you're protecting family's reputation. And we know, and maybe you can relate to this too, I grew up in a household where it was like nothing that happens in these four walls is discussed outside of the home. And trying to protect your family's reputation and keeping the peace is such a burden to carry, as a child, when you just want to be a kid. And so silence, and protecting dysfunction kind of almost becomes a way of who you, of the person that you become ultimately. And so the pain keeps repeating itself in the next generation and in ways that you don't even notice. So I think, for me, it was really getting to the core of understanding and knowing that, out of survival, people do certain things. And when I work with families or I speak with women in the community, I express that, it's no one's fault per se, but this is likely where it came from. And in times you just have to take a step back and really address it and observe it and sit with it, and even in the uncomfortable things because it's necessary. But that's how I best find the way to best express it to others and help them through it.
Well, the other side of my winged second career, but I've always served. So I do a lot of missions and work with homeless and impoverished families with children. And so that's almost like my sweet spot. I call it my sweet spot, but then if some things are part of your calling, you're just trying to find the right way to say it.
Absolutely.
But one thing that I think I learned during the course of time doing a lot of client intake, and we do a lot of outreach as well, then outreach and evangelism. So you've got some coming to you, more of like, I want prayer, or can you pray for my family, blah blah blah. Then you've got some that are more, I would say, practical. What can you do to help me get off the street, or help me and my family, or my kids and I, we're living in a car, or we're living behind a building, yada yada yada. They don't, didn't want people to know or someone to know, but they trusted me. I don't take trust for granted. And let me know, because you don't want external people outside that four walls, per se, knowing what's going on, because that could add a completely different dynamic. Depending on the situation, sometimes that dynamic is necessary. But, I think me being a parent, looking back when you said about, pointing fingers or being, accusatory as to who did what, who didn't do what, and why they did what they did. You question, you wanted to know why your mother did certain things. In the and it is true when you said as well, you just realize, going further back, how she was raised and she did things out of survival mode. I accepted a long time ago that no, it's nobody's to blame. People do the best they can with the hand they were dealt. And that looks different for different people. That's why when you talk about generations and you talk about healing and you're talking about dissecting dysfunction in order to clear, as I would say, your bloodline for the future generations to walk through and not endure the things that you've had to endure, you tread heavy but lightly, because you don't want to cast blame. You think back to possibly generations that raised us. They were on the cusp of education, whereas the generations that raised them couldn't read.
Absolutely.
You see what I'm saying? They were on the cusp, and that generation was on another cusp of a generation that could not read. So we, even though you want to look and see your battle scars and all of these things there, you still count it as a blessing that you know what you know and you're alive. I just told somebody this earlier, that you're still alive to learn, to gather more pebbles, to gather more stones, to gather more knowledge and information. A lot of times people, they're talking about, well, the world is, it's consistent of products and information. Yes, but what do you do with it? When you get the products, when you get the information, how do you work it for the greater good, or do you hoard it? The same thing with information. When you learn something, you share that information, you may not see it come into fruition in that person's life, but it's perpetual. It's an upheaval, perpetual. It continues on. Somebody's going to quote what you said. Somebody's going to say, well, I don't remember her name, but I remember, she had on glasses and she came and she said XYZ and XYZ. And that really helped me. Maybe it can help you. That
Yeah,
as
and
well. Go
yeah, I was
ahead.
going to say, and you get to a point where, you say, okay, it stops with me, and understanding, that
Precisely.
things that happened
Precisely.
before you happen the way they did. But it all begins with honesty. And one of the things that I say that is important to know is in the healing journey, it is just that. It's a journey. It doesn't stop,
It's
just
true.
like you
Right,
said.
right, 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 right,
Like that it continues, and you're learning things every day, and there are going to be moments where you feel like you've made some progress, and you definitely have made some progress, and then something will happen that will bring you right back to that space where you fought so hard to come back from. And that's okay. It's all just continuing to give it your best, and most importantly, showing yourself grace. And as you're showing others grace, it's important for you to also show yourself grace through the process.
Right. That is absolutely correct. And watch what you say. Watch what you say, even to yourself. Even to yourself. Sometimes it may not be, something that goes deep financially within your genes or your genetics or your generations or forward. Sometimes sometimes it's word curses. Things that people said to demean you or and I will say I'm blown away a lot of times with some of the young people that I deal with that take me on as a mentor, not as an executive coach, but as a mentor. And sometimes it's like you want to send them on their way, but you realize something's going on in their life. You've been there, done it, wrote the book and the t-shirt, and it's like I can help them, but you have to find that time. But the thing that I will say a lot of times just completely knocks me just off kilter is to hear a young person in this day and time not have any type of support with their dreams or their hopes and their aspirations because Uncle Bobo didn't do this, and Aunt Jane didn't do it, and our family always did this. It's like you would think that's something, you would have heard generations prior, but that is still very prevalent today.
Yeah,
Very
absolutely.
prevalent. It's so hurtful. I couldn't even find the right words to express. It is so hurtful. And it's like, man, perhaps God really did put you in my path because I'm not going to let you leave me with that thought in your head.
Absolutely.
You
And
can do it.
thank goodness for people like you who are stepping in and being that for those who need it. Unfortunately, not many people even know where to go or to get that kind of guidance. So it's really important to have someone like you, a mentor or someone guiding them through the process. And I mean, life is difficult. And from the very
Yes.
beginning, we're taught, we have to get an education, we have to be successful. There are all these dreams and things we may have, in our minds. And to some extent, obviously, in this day and age, things have changed a little bit. Women,
Right.
are a little bit more empowered, and they dream bigger even. But sometimes it seems so unreachable. And so when you have these core things within you, it makes it difficult to find the that umph or the desire or the motivation and actually go the extra mile to accomplish the things that you want. And it's very easy to fall into the trap of just feeling like, it doesn't look like this is going to work out for me. So someone like you being able to guide them like that, I think it's really important.
I appreciate that. I didn't choose it. Sometimes they choose me. And that's why a lot of times I make mention of it being a divine connection. Because a lot of times you don't know what a person needs. And sometimes people don't have the courage to say what they need. But when you just spark a conversation with a stranger, and it's like these antennas come up. And it's like, well, no, don't you ever believe that. You can do anything you set your mind to do. You just have to create the steps and oftentimes go through the process. You have to go through
Absolutely.
that process. But again, even in dealing with some of those that I've encountered, with the families, with the children, they are so broken and don't know that they're broken, or you're trying to fix it, and it's like, no, it's not going to happen overnight. It's just like with our premise, Thrive 360, mind, body, spirit, and finances. That's not a quick fix. That's a process. Healing is not a quick fix. It is a process. It is a
Absolutely.
process. It's almost as if to say the big part is done. The big part, whenever you go through that healing pain, it's like the big part is done, but there's still remnants of things that need to be addressed. And it has to be done gradually. So it's
Absolutely.
a, what do they say? Like a becoming, a work in progress, it's a journey. It is always a journey. And one has to accept it as a journey. Otherwise, you're thinking, okay, I'm going to do this today and everything else is going to fall in order. Well, when you start to talk about generations, that's not an individual, that's a group of people. And so you have to have faith for that middle process and faith to complete that journey and faith to continue to know that as you continue to become,
And
you
faith
see?
is serves as an anchor, in
Yes.
those moments. It reminds us that our pain is not the end of our story, that as long as you have faith, you can accomplish anything with the mustard seed of faith, as the
Absolutely,
word reminds us.
absolutely,
And so I feel like
absolutely.
it gives us strength to confront those difficult truths in our lives, and it be it the truths or really the lies that we tell ourselves oftentimes, and the things that we believe. But we know that ultimately restoration is possible. That faith transforms survival into purpose. And so as long as you have that instinct, I think you can accomplish anything. But faith has definitely been a major part of my journey.
So where does faith fit in family relationships that are still messy?
Where does it fit? Well, You have to have faith to some extent that God will do what he needs to do to restore
Absolutely.
your family.
Absolutely.
You know, it's something that I still to this day am hoping for. And then hope is another one of those words that
Yes.
are a great part of my vocabulary, because as long as I have that positive, you know, that belief that things will come around. Now, the important part of that process is understanding that you are not in control as to when that's going to happen.
Say it again for the people in the back. Say it again for the people
in
the back. It
is out of your control, you know, and you have to surrender to whatever it is that God is doing in your life, in your family, you know, as a part of your journey, because there is nothing you can do but continue to have faith and hope that things will turn around and be restored, both within you and within your family, and for generations to come. You know, I think that's a beautiful place to be, a beautiful space to live in when you're kind of in this, you know, weightless space of, you know, God, just do what you will in my life and bring the people in my life
Absolutely.
That you know that I need. And when you surrender to that, you know, ultimately, it's easier to deal with the difficult families and the dysfunction, because you know that you have no control over that and it has nothing to do with you.
So how has that shaped you personally? How has your faith helped along your healing journey with your family?
It has definitely made me stronger. It's definitely made me more understanding, more grace filled. It's definitely made me more proactive as well, because I feel like that is my position. I feel like there is a reason why these little things have been planted in my heart and in my mind. And I have been granted an opportunity to have this platform where I can share these things with people for the purpose of, you know, being able to restore as much as I can. So I have found it.
Are you
to
looking
be
for a savvy
a
speaker
revealing.
To add value to your upcoming
in
event?
In a number of different
Cindy,
ways,
the busy woman's cheerleader,
I have
empowers
been
groups
the
across
most
the globe to thrive
last,
360
I'd
on
say,
purpose
4 years
in mind,
of my life,
body,
more so
spirit,
than I ever
and finances.
Imagined I would be.
As a dynamic
but
speaker
I know
known
that
for delivering
only
insight
in
a relatable
to
tone,
and if
Cindy
I was
brings
going to
real
make an
world
impact
experience,
in the way
practical
God
strategies,
to make
and an
impact,
energy that keeps audiences engaged from the very first minute. She's a thought leader, serial entrepreneur, author,
the
leadership
of who
coach,
I am and
humanitarian,
what I've
and purpose pusher
to help others,
that produces
you know,
impactful
it,
dialogues.
Like earlier, you know,
her style
we
blends clear
in life
expertise
to,
with authentic
to
storytelling
back
and
take
humorous
the hand
candor,
of someone else
making even complex ideas
so
attainable
has
and
really
actionable
just been a part of
for
that,
every
you know?
Audience,
it's the
be it
one,
faith-based,
it's the thing that
poet,
I needed
or
in the
secular.
Moment when I was going
Whether your
through
goal
it,
is to empower,
I wish I
educate,
had,
or spark positive change, Cindy creates an inclusive environment
where
people feel seen, motivated and ready to act.
Book of Job.
She's now accepting new speaking engagements.
Dear to me
book
one
the
time
Busy Woman's
it,
Cheerleader
like,
today.
Yeah, that's
submit
right.
your
it's
request
like
by email to thrive at thecindyrand.com or online through
www.thecindyrand.com.
Make your event most memorable
reflect,
and remember
to
together
refer to as
we
a
can thrive 360 mm-hmm. on
you know,
purpose.
So a lot of times, and this is
Are
a
you
sticky
look-
one. So during the courses of healing, sometimes some of the things that you are, I would say, called to heal from are things that you said you never talk about again. It's like, you know, I smushed it, squashed it. I love and forgive everybody. I don't need to go deal with it. But then you're being called to heal in that area. Why? Mm-hmm. Because somebody's coming along your path that's going to need that information. But this is something that you were so ashamed of, you never wanted to repeat. How do you feel about that? How does that, when you made mention earlier of sometimes some people are ashamed, how does that like encompass healing?
Yeah.
How does that encompass, you know, basically aligning or straightening up those generational cycles for the next generation?
I'll tell you, as you were speaking, the first thing that came to mind to me was I was working a case. So part of what I do is I'm an advocate in the community, and I work alongside a law enforcement agency, and they'll call me out to different crisis-related incidents. And I remember responding to an incident where a mother was just shaken over finding out that her daughter was sexually assaulted. And in that moment, she expressed to me, this is so hard for me because I have been through that as well. And I never would have wanted my child to have experienced this. And so she was broken to no end. And it is customary in our profession for to be told, don't express your personal experiences, you know, and in certain situations. However, I have found from a real place that it is important to be able to share. And so in that moment, that's exactly what I did. And I empathized with her. And I told her, look, I understand, you know, the things that I expressed in my book as well. I was sexually molested in my childhood. And I can't even begin to imagine what I would be feeling in this moment, having, you know, been to be a parent, and now your child is going through it too. I say all that to say that we go through things in life that we wish we never did. And we wish we could rewrite our story and turn back the hands of time. But there's a reason we hear this statement so often, you know, things happen for a reason. You may not know what that reason is, but there is a reason why God takes you on a certain path. And that is so that you can experience certain things. Sometimes, you know, you don't know how it's going to serve someone else.
Right.
And
right.
So as you were saying that, that's what I thought about, you know, how I have had several experiences that I share in my book, those accounts. And I also share in person, you know, with people when they need it the most. I think it's important for people to see themselves in someone else and understand yes. that they're not by themselves yes. when they're yes. going through these things.
And yeah. and be relatable. That's a hard line between, you know, the clinical versus mm-hmm. spiritual versus yes. the natural.
Absolutely. That's,
you know, it's not a blurred line. It's very clear. Mm-hmm. But depending upon your role and mm-hmm. what you're doing, how you approach things. But oftentimes when people are at their most vulnerable, I'm not going to say damaged, at their most vulnerable state, mm-hmm. sometimes that empathetic ear or knowing that it wasn't just you or this has happened before. And I'm, you know, I apologize. I'm so sorry that this happened to you, but we're going to get through it. Yes. You know, we're going to get yeah. through it. And that's very important. A lot of times transitioning a person from a victim to a survivor to let them know that it's just not you.
Mm-hmm.
Just like scripture says, there's nothing done under the sun that's uncommon to man. It happens somewhere, sometime, in some place mm-hmm. to somebody else, even though it may be a unique situation to you.
Yeah. You know,
it has yeah. happened somewhere, but silence.
Mm-hmm.
Silence a lot of times hinders, and then silence a lot of times helps.
Yes.
You know, yes. sometimes. So it again, it goes back to what I said about clinical versus mm-hmm. spiritual versus, you know, the natural.
Yes.
Where you have to have, I would say, understanding. Some may say discernment, but you have yep. to be able to understand what fits where and when and how mm-hmm. to address it. You know,
absolutely.
You have to be able to have that. And yeah. and the funny thing is, too, when we talk about generations, most of the time, people are thinking about generations, their biological generations, and mm-hmm. what went before them. Now, that's a big part, but we're in a world now with different generations.
Mm-hmm.
It may be a biological generation going forward, or mm-hmm. it may just be the people that he put in your path.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And this is a different generation. know, I say that because my son, so I have a 25-year-old son, uh-huh. and I have learned, you know, not just with him, but with, you know, his friends and, you know, other, you know, children of friends that I have. And,
yeah.
you know, there is a different.
Very. There's just, that right there. Very.
Understanding of the world and the way that they move is far different. And it really and I've seen this in all households. It doesn't matter how you have raised them in what culture, when they get out there into this real world where they're now communicating and, commingling with other people, and a lot of those things and values and principles are being, brought on to them, they have a battle that they're also, facing. And so it's a completely different understanding of parenting nowadays, which is, I know, very difficult, for a lot of parents out there. But I think understanding that it is a different generation and just approaching it a little bit differently is really helpful. And that's also a part of breaking those cycles, right? Because you can't put on your kids what was put onto you, or you can't raise them in the same way. I'll give you a brief example with my son when he was in high school. I grew up always wanting to be this perfect kid, right? Because I didn't want to be the other kid who gave my mother any issues. I wanted my mother to be happy. I felt like I was responsible for her happiness, and the best way that I could do that was to be like the perfect child, get good grades, go to school, all those things. And I did that. And when my son was in school, I was in some way kind of expecting him to be the same way too. And so now I'm pouring into him my expectations of what I think that he should, the kind of student he should be, and had to very quickly reassess, this is not me. My child has different, capacity and has different understanding and different things that I need to be able to acknowledge. And not to mention different stressors, that I didn't have when I was in school. So understanding that, I think, is important.
Going back to what we mentioned earlier about the generations before us that did the best they could with the hand they were dealt. And then we found that we did the same thing. We just had a different level of resources. And then those that come after us, they'll do the same thing. They just have a different set of resources in addition to. So each generation, I would say ahead of us, comes with more resources. So when you mention your 25-year-old son, a lot of times, and like I said, to each his own, I find that it is beneficial that you give the old and the new. You have to give the old and the new. And it goes back to what I was saying about we're still here. That means we're still learning. That means we can still pour. There's something, in other words, we'd be gone if, our assignment was up, our life is up, we'd be gone. So there's something in you at this stage of life that he needs and other people needs. The same with myself, even though I keep saying, I'm going to go on cruise control and just, kind of just lay back and chill out. And it seems to, that's just not the case. That's another story for another day. But the thing is, it's like they're, even though one may feel that they are calculating numbers, they're getting older, and the younger generation, they're not listening. There's something in you that they need. Something out of your mouth that they need to hear. And it narrows down and boils down to the W word, wisdom. I believe every parent, especially today, where you don't have hard copy books, everything's a PDF on a computer or a tablet screen. It's ridiculous. I feel like even more so now, you have to pray for wisdom. You have to pray for wisdom. I remember praying for that for mine at the time. And it was like, man, I mean, it was crazy during my time. And now I'm looking at this new stuff percolating and, and it's like, oh no, God, just give me wisdom. Wisdom and how to raise a wisdom and what to say, what to do. And it made it a lot easier. It doesn't make it perfect, but it made it a lot easier. And what happened was, whenever she did decide that she wanted to try me, I'd push her right back into place and she'd go back on the east side. And it's like, okay, let me push you back into place. And she trod under. And then it was absolutely nothing. And I laughed to this day. I said, she really did. She was a good girl. She really did not get on my nerves until 17.5 because she kept reminding me she was about to be 18. It was like, so what? You don't pay rent. You're still in my purse. I mean, what does that mean to me? What does that mean to me? That was the only time. So me asking for wisdom And now, you know, not having school-age children, I still ask for wisdom in business, wisdom in a meeting, wisdom, you know, in my interactions, in the small groups, you know, a faith-based, secular, whatever you want to call it. That's a thing for me. You know, I ask for wisdom because it's like we know a lot, but we don't know everything. And it goes back to what you said. You have to be honest with yourself first. You know, and a part of being honest with yourself is that, you know, I don't know. I don't know everything. I'm still learning too. Or I tell you what, we're going to learn this together. You know, we're going to learn this together. And then that way you've got your boots on, you're working, they've got their boots on, they're working. And sometimes it's kind of comical because, you know, they're seeing the human side of you because this is how you learn versus, like you said, your son was polar opposite. His learning behaviors were different. The way he grasped information and the way he understood or knew life to be is completely different than what you had expected of yourself.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and I think it's important to emphasize exactly what you said about, you know, the trial and error. You know, you as you go through life, you don't necessarily have a handbook on how to address certain things that come
your way.
Absolutely
not.
You certainly pray for that wisdom and that guidance, and you spend your time in the Word, you know, for those who have built that spiritual practice. But a lot of people don't even know where to start when it comes to that. In my book, I pretty much describe my life, you know, from before I was born to, you know, even past COVID, the things that I was experiencing and a lot of the things and goals and dreams that I had, and how foundationally my root relationship for me, which was with my mother, not having that really affected the way that I carried on in life. And so it was kind of like, you know, relationships were failing and business opportunities were failing. And I was going into different aspects of my life with a certain kind of thinking until I just decided to be still and say, okay, I can't keep, and this is where the release control part comes in. You know, I can't keep thinking that I am in control of my life. And what do I need to do to get to the place where I am getting and really receiving the wisdom that is right before me in order to move on to do the things that he has planned for me to do. Jeremiah 29:11 played a major part in my life and just giving me that hope for what was to come, and understanding that once I surrendered things to him, I had an understanding that he had a plan. It was not in any way, shape, or form what I had imagined. and never did I imagine I would be doing things like this because
Tell me about it. Yeah.
You know?
Tell me about it.
But here we are, you know, and this is what he's called us to.
Yeah. That is amazing. Yeah. What is your favorite chapter in your book?
I'd say my favorite chapter is certainly the chapter where I go into grief, you know, when the different forms of grief that we experience in our life, especially as in this chapter, as it relates to my son's father, my ex, who was such a pivotal part of his life, and losing him, you know, to cancer at such an early age. He was in his late 30s. How that really shifted my thinking and understanding of, you know, what life is as a whole, you know, because I feel like those who experience cancer teach us something so valuable about life, especially those who know that they are reaching the end of their days. There is a certain amount of just peace that comes with knowing that you're headed in that direction, that when you're a family member or a loved one seeing that, it really just shifts the way that you see life in a way that is expansive, and restores your faith in so many ways, as difficult as it is. So I would say that probably is my most comforting chapter, because so much came from that moment, as hard as it was.
So what would be your top three, I would say, advice or levels of understanding that you'd like to leave with the audience? Your top three for breaking generational cycles and moving forward in a healthy and healed manner?
Yes, I would say that healing begins where silence ends. You know, as we were talking about the importance of silence, that breaking generational cycles isn't a rebellion, like a lot of people feel, especially those on the other side within your family. It's restoration, you know, and that ultimately courage is telling the truth, even when the truth is uncomfortable.
All right. I love it. How can people get in contact with you? Where can they find your book? All that good stuff.
Yeah, so I have an inspirational platform. It's a lifestyle platform called Issa Lifestyle. It's spelled a little different. It's ISSALIVE style. It's a lifestyle. Okay. And that was part of a blog that I started during COVID, where I felt like people just needed a little bit of inspiration and some help through some difficult times. So you can find me most active on that platform, on social media, on the website, issalifestyle.com. For business, you know, connections, you can find me at greenconsultingofficial.com. And those who would like to connect with me on LinkedIn, you can find me as Lynn Green as well. For those who want to purchase my book, it's available everywhere you buy books. So you can purchase at any online retailer.
Awesome. 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 And we'll definitely have that information down in the description as well. I have enjoyed this so much. I have enjoyed this. I thank you so much for being on.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity.
You are welcome. We'll do it again.
Yes, would love to.
Thank you again for tuning in to Complete Wellness with Cindy, the Busy Woman's Cheerleader. Follow me on social media at Busy Woman's Cheerleader. Remember, together we write our stories, share our journeys, create memories, and leave our marks in history. Until next time, peace, blessings, and joy be multiplied to you. Ta-ta.